Well, welcome everybody, and we have a very esteemed panel on umpires here. I'm going to introduce both of them, and then I'm going to go to each of them to talk about the current state of umpiring and the future of umpiring. On my far right, we've got Mike Port. Mike started in 1969 after graduating from local USIU. Became a minor league second baseman for the San Diego Padres. Worked his way into the front office, working under Buzzy Bevesi, and became the farm director for the Padres in 73, and then followed Buzzy up to the Angels in 1978, and he was instrumental for the Angels teams that almost won the pennant in 82, 85, and 86 of the Donnie Moore pitch. Then he went on to the Boston Red Sox, became acting GM and assistant general manager all the way through the years when they won their first championship in 2004. 2005, he became superintendent of the umpires from 2005 to 2011. So that's what we want to know is he's now on the other side. He was now in charge of the umpires. So I want to get his perspective on that today. And my immediate right, we have Jerry Davis, one of the best umpires in the history of the game. Yep. Jerry is
here's the 20.
Yeah. Jerry is in his 38th year. That is the second longest in baseball history, next to Joe West, who's on 42. But Jerry is consecutive. That's the longest consecutive. Joe West lost his job for 2 years in 99-2000. And Jerry's been a crew chief since 1999. And two nights ago, he went ahead of Tom Connolly in the fourth place for the most games umpired in history. Jerry has worked the most postseason games of any umpire in history. He's done four All-Star games and five World Series, plus all the other league series. He was instrumental in that he was crew chief for the first time an instant replay had a call overturned.
But it wasn't my call.
He also did the last game at Shea Stadium. He also kicked Pinata, the Yankee pitcher, out for having pine tar on his neck.
Yep.
And he also, I'll have Jerry talk about it a little later, he has some leg guards that the umpires use that's very special because of the way Jerry has his stance, the way he puts his hands behind. I'll have you explain that to Jerry Davis Sports, if anybody's interested in that. But I'm going to start with Mike Port and have him talk about his time as the umpire supervisor from 2005 to 2011. And if anybody has questions, there's little pieces of paper in the back, and you can mark it down and keep it on the table, and Jeff will be bringing them up to me and handing them to me. So if you have any questions at this time, go up there, and then I'll have them, and I'll direct them to either Mike or Jerry. So, Mike, I'll have you start.
Thanks, Fred. Good morning, everyone. And just to sort of set the stage for us, so to speak, may I ask by a show of hands, how many people here have ever umpired at any level? Excellent. Good for you. Then, given that, I think you'll understand what I'm about to say, and that is it doesn't take very long to realize that anybody, even the general populace can do what you folks and what Jerry and the other MLB umpires do. Anybody can do that until you try it. And then you'll find out you don't even come close. Given the level of concentration, given the ability that it takes to umpire, especially at the major league level, is something that I found most impressive. I don't know if it's changed. Maybe Jerry knows the number, but when I was working in the commissioner's office and was privileged to work with these fellows, at that time, certainly it related to staff openings, but umpires would work 9 years in the minor leagues on average as an apprenticeship before they would get their shot at the major league level. And as I know it, that just about parallels the amount of time and education it would take one to become a neurosurgeon. Differences in the professions, I admit. Sometimes, perhaps not, though. But I found out that very quickly, my affinity for umpiring and the umpires, the guys who do the job, even though I spent the better part of 35 plus years on the personnel side of the game, my friendship and affinity for the umpires really started. It occurred to me 50 years ago this year when I was the general manager of the then Padres affiliate at Key West, Florida, and accompanying the umpires one night after a controversial call, as things were then in Key West, we got garbage dumped on us. So I had an idea then of what the guys go through after that garbage incident. That particular crew of umpires, there were two of them then, and given all of the garbage, fish heads and other such items, as I recall, all they had to do then was endure a 12-hour drive from Key West, Florida, up to Daytona Beach, Florida, for their next series. But they did it, they made it, and that showed me something right there. So when I watch the umpires work now, and having, again, had the privilege of being associated with them, I know the level of diligence and concentration that it takes at the major league level. The players are the game, but my observation is without the umpires, there is no game. It's an uncontrolled scrimmage. And one of my favorite exercises when I worked in the commissioner's office was annually at the general manager's meeting to try to create a better appreciation for what the umpires do. I would ask the assembled general managers, many of them names that you would know from the media and your affinity for their teams, I would ask them, why don't each of you pick a game next spring, one of your exhibition games, and play it with no umpires and no fair taking a player and putting him on the bases or behind the mound to call pitches or whatever. In 3 years of trying that, no takers. So I think we are all best served to consider, not that it has ever happened with any frequency, but what happens with respect to the start of a game when the umpires are running late? Nothing happens. Nobody wants them around, but nobody will play without them. And I find that to be a little bit ironic in and of itself. My observation, and Jerry can speak better to this, is that the way umpiring is now, people say the umpires need to be held accountable. Well, even going back to my entry into the commissioner's office in 2005, no group of individuals in the game was then nor is now more accountable than are the umpires. You've got instant replay. You've got umpire supervisors at every game. You've got every game virtually televised, so you have a recorded history. And it's a behind-the-scenes thing, but the accountability and the effort toward improvement, the accountability is high, and the effort toward improvement is ever ongoing. One of the first things I learned when I got to New York was from Joe West. And we were talking about a questionable call, and Joe taught me something then that I've always carried with me. Don't tell me that I missed a call. Tell me why I missed it so that I can make a correction and go forward. And I would share with you another eureka moment, if you will, that I've found out many times over the years. Umpires miss calls. Eureka. But given that, within the nature of the game, it also occurs to me that I've seen some players making in excess of $20 million a year strike out, miss ground balls, throw wild pitches, and do some pretty strange things on the bases. So this is part of the human nature of the game. And I think the game in the overall should be, should strive for excellence. If we strive too much for perfection through the use of technology, as a matter of opinion, I think you're headed down the wrong trail. I read something within about the last year, never thought I would be quoting a physicist, but most of you are probably familiar with the late Stephen Hawking. And I saw a quote from him that said, some of the greatest threats to mankind will come from advances in science and technology. Well, I've changed that a little bit because as I've seen the game now, I would suggest to you that that comment also applies if you change it to read, some of the greatest threats to mankind and to baseball will come from advances in science and technology. Because if you get too far into technology, you're going to remove the human element from the nature of the game. I used to find it interesting that people would say to me, you know, why don't you, this was before the current replay system and, you know, replay and so forth. And if someone mentioned not having an interest in losing the human element, people would say, oh, never mind the human element. We get the call right and so forth. And I would respond, oh, fine. Then you won't mind the introduction of using a pitching machine. Think of what that would save in Tommy John surgeries. Introducing a pitching machine, and also a gentleman in Japan, as some of you may know, has indeed invented a robot hitter that makes contact 90-some percent of the time. People respond to that question by saying, oh, well, we don't want to see the human element taken out of the game. Well, you can't have it both ways. So the game is essentially a striving for excellence, not perfection. In my days on the club side, Gene Mauch, who was our manager over a number of years with the Angels, annually used to tell the players, as he did capably, I will handle the umpires, but you players have to remember there's no rule against scoring 17 runs. And the players would look at each other wondering, where is he going with this? And Gene would simply say, let me explain this to you. In any game, your third baseman might miss a ground ball with tying or winning run on third. With the tying or winning run in scoring position, your best hitter might strike out. An umpire might miss a call. A pitcher might throw a wild pitch and move a man into scoring position. These things are going to happen over the course of the game. But the eventual outcome is really in your control, because if you score 17 runs and the other team only gets 8, you win. So that was a way he enhanced their concentration. And over the course of time, certainly players, I think Jerry would attest, they will snap out of emotion. I think a lot of times that is the case. But the game is entirely dependent on their abilities within their hands. It's not the umpires making the decisions. I mean, people swing and miss. And certainly, I think it's fashionable now. Jerry will probably tell you, for guys to go back and say, well, you know, what you did with me on that on the first called strike caused me to swing on this pitch. Well, things are within their control, but again, without the umpires, it's a different game. And one of the things that I've observed over the past, I would say, 14 or 15 years is anytime something comes up within the game, baseball's powers that be will be the first to say, well, we could have the umpires do such and such. Well, I think they have their hands quite full with what the rules are when they're working the plate and having to rule on calls that like that they may not have seen since they were in umpire school, if even then, 20 years before. So this is a group that is important to the game. They aren't well acknowledged. I realize it's traditional to malign them, question, and so forth, well and good, but I think under that there has to be a distinct appreciation for the job they do and what they mean to the game.
Now we'll have Jerry give his thoughts on the current status of the game, but I also know that a lot of you here were at the game last night, so I think you got to get some real insight and a couple of the calls and plays last night from Mr. Davis right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Fred. First of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. A group like this is really fans. And the word fan, as all of you know, is short for fanatic. And umpires deal with that on a first name basis, pretty much. First, before I get started, Mike basically took my whole speech, so there's not a lot to say. I do want to tell him how much I appreciate his service when he was in our charge. Mike is one of the fairest guys you'll ever come across. He had to deal with clubs complaining about us constantly. Always got our side of the story, always presented it properly to the clubs, and all of the umpires are very appreciative of your service with us.
Thank you.
Fred talked about the state of the game now. I think to go back just a couple years from before we had replay, if you remember those days, most of the fans, whenever a call went against their team, we were just automatically wrong. You know, it was just kill the bum. You know, we were wrong. And when replay became available, even before we used it in decision-making process, just when, think back when you're at home watching a game on television and it first became accessible for you to see, fortunately, it showed that we were right the vast majority of the time. So I think it changed the mindset of the fan a lot from let's just kill the guy to even when we miss one, now the attitude is, you know, they get most of those right. You know, they're right most of the time. And I think those statistics are really, really favorable. I mean, pitches were right an average of 97% of the time. Plays on the bases, 99.3%. That's before the replay, 99.3. And how replay evolved is a very interesting sidebar. Replay didn't come about because the owners wanted us to get more plays correct. Replay came about because the season ticket holders were complaining that they did not receive the same fan experience that people at home get. So they needed to negotiate the right to be able to show it on the scoreboard at the game. That's the reason we have replay, not because we wanted to get more and more plays correct. But now, I mean, there even when you look at a replay, I mean, I'm a big football fan. I'm a big Green Bay Packers fan, all right? And there are, trust me, there are a lot of referees that miss calls that go against my Packers, okay? I'm very much aware of that. But now, with replay in baseball in particular, there are probably some plays that you look at that may get overturned or confirmed or whatever, and you still don't agree with it. I mean, one of the big things that sticks out of my mind, as a crew chief, when there's a replay, the crew chief goes to the headset along with the calling umpire, okay? When I'm there quite often, I'll have the thing on, and they're showing the replay. I look at it. I look in the stands, and they're looking, the fans are looking at the play in slow motion, stop action. I look at them, and half of them are going like this, and half of them are going like that. know. So from an umpire's perspective about replay, I mean, we hate to miss calls, you know, and that's one of the things that Joe Torre in particular talks about now, is that from his managing days, he just felt that when we missed the call, we just went out and had a beer and dinner, and, you know, there was no big deal. But now, because of being in the locker room and coming and seeing the umpires come in after the game and how terrible we feel when we miss a call, it was a big surprise to him. And for that reason, he has said, I'll run through the wall for you guys, because he knows how much those things mean to us. And it's I think overall replay's been very good for us. I'm sure we'll have a lot more questions about that. So, again, thanks for having me.
Is it possible we could get a little talk on a couple of the plays last night at the
game? Of course. We had a lot of close calls last night. I guess, obviously, our first base umpire last night, Vic Carapazza, had four calls that were overturned. And, I mean, I got to be honest, if that had been me, you'd be walking me off the ledge. You know, I mean, that or, you know, hide the razor blades kind of thing. Because we do take, there's no question, we take a lot of pride in what we do. And the big thing that happens when you have a call that you miss is you have to analyze, well, why did I miss it? You know, did I miss it because I was out of position? Did I miss it because, well, I mean, was I blocked out? The majority of the time, one of the big, big phrases in umpiring is timing. And the description of timing to me is basically, when do you use your judgment? I'm sure, again, you've all been at home watching a game and the pitch comes down, pitch comes in, and I call a pitch a ball, and you say, man, that was a pretty good pitch. All right, well, what happened was, because you're sitting on your sofa and you don't feel the same anxieties that we do on the field, you're able to wait and use your judgment at the proper time after everything happens. And trust me, that's a lot easier said than done in the heat of the moment. So we are constantly talking to ourselves. We have the little voice in our mind about, you know, slow your timing down, make sure you use your judgment at the proper time. So we analyze when we look at a play, and all of us do whenever we have a call that's overturned, we receive those instantaneously after the game. And we should, I know I do, go through the process of, why did I miss that play? Did I miss it for some of the above stated reasons? Or, quite frankly, am I human and I'm going to miss plays? I think that's difficult, and it would be interesting to talk to Vic right now to see how he feels about that, because there were a couple calls. One was a pickoff where the guy was safe, got back, and then because he was injured, he kind of rolled and they tagged him on the arm as it came up. And those things are pretty tough to see in real life. I remember the actual first call that I ever had overturned. I go to the headset. I had called the guy safe at second on a steal, and the glove came through. I didn't see the pant move. I didn't see a tag at all. So I called him safe. And said, the Pirates are challenging the call at second base, which is safe. I'm very confident that it's going to come back. If not, call stands, confirmed. Jerry, we're going to have to overturn the call. The string of his glove touched his leg going by. Now, that rule has since been changed, but at that time, that was not the case. The string of his glove. So in that instance, I have to ask myself those questions. Did I use my judgment at the wrong time? You know, was I out of position? Or am I human and I'm going to miss those? I mean, again, you can't fall back on that constantly over and over again. If you're missing calls, you have to be honest with yourself. Umpiring in particular is a very self-evaluating job. You have to ask yourself those questions constantly if you want to continue to improve. And if you're honest with yourself, you will improve. But as far as the calls themselves last night, they were all four very close calls. And interestingly enough, it's obviously instant replay has changed the game. And the biggest example I have of that is a steal at second base. I mean, years ago, we'd have a steal at second. If you call the runner out, he slams his helmet down, gets in your face. The manager's there in 15 seconds, and you have situation management on your hands, all right? Now, you have the same play. You call the guy out. He doesn't do anything. He looks at the dugout and goes like this. But think about what that does. I mean, that greatly changes the skill set of that umpire. All right, you don't have to have the same people skills. You don't have to have a lot of the things that we had to have back in those days. I mean, handling situations and managers back in the day was the way you discern the difference between a good umpire and a great umpire. If you're able to handle situations and calm a situation rather than incite it, then you become a great umpire. You know, and now, unfortunately, a lot of that is being taken out. The vast, vast majority of our ejections nowadays are over balls and strikes. And the reason is because there's no replay for that. I don't want to say never, because 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been sure there'd be replay now. So I can't say there will never be balls and strikes, but the technology's not there right now. They were going to do it in Atlantic City on a trial basis, as most of you know, and the system wasn't capable of doing it. You know, the box you see on TV, which, by the way, is the same size for Aaron Judge as it is Jose Altuve. It's also one-dimensional, you know, and I mean, I know for a fact that there are pitchers that can, that have good enough control that they could throw the ball where it would bounce on the plate, but still cross the strike zone, and the hitters would go much more berserk than they do nowadays. So I don't want to say it'll never occur, but it's just not capable right now of being able to do it because the strike zone's three-dimensional. I mean, the pitcher will be like, you know, playing disc golf, you know, or throwing a frisbee where their only intent is for it to just nick the strike zone. I mean, there are pitches now that we call a ball that the catcher has to almost dive for. He has to lunge to catch, but it crosses the strike zone. If machines start calling those pitches strikes, it could really be problems.
Can Mike or Jerry talk about, I found out that there's the strike zone you see on TV. Let's say the Padres are playing the Cardinals. When the strike zone is seen in St. Louis, it's different than the one that's shown for the Padres. And then the umpires have their own calibrated strike zone for every ballpark. But the teams home and away have to do theirs from the dugout. So they're just kind of putting it up there. So why don't they just take on the umpires' strike zone so there wouldn't be any fights?
Well, if I understand your point, the evaluation system for balls and strikes, and Jerry can update this, but when I first got involved, it was a system called Questech, and I think they've had a couple of iterations beyond that, going to Sport Vision, and I think now they use TrackMan.
TrackMan. Yeah. We were at ZE for a while, and now we're at TrackMan. Right. And the interesting point is that if these systems were so good, we wouldn't continue to change systems.
But I would point out that, to my experience, when we went from Questech to ZE, at first Questech, we were told, the umpiring department and the umpires were told by the powers that be at Major League Baseball, love them as we do, that this is the best system that money can buy. And when the umpires early on with Questech, when the staff average turned out to be around 95% accurate in those days, the people who told us that this was the best system money can buy were the first to say, these guys can't be that good. I found that a little bit contradictory. Then we moved on to the ZE system, and the same thing transpired. This is a better system. and it will better evaluate the umpires. And when the staff average, when I left Major League Baseball, when the staff average was approaching 96%, the people who were the proponents of that system said, wait a minute, these guys can't be that good. Well, the point is, they are that good. And I think the staff average over the course of, 2,280-some-odd regular season games, I believe the staff average was even higher than that last year, approaching.
The interesting part about that as well is that there's not that big of a difference between the highest percentage and the lowest percentage. It's like 0.8%. All right, so every 100 pitches, the worst umpire, the guy you can't stand, who sticks it to your team every game, misses one more pitch per 100 pitches. That's, you know, I think that's passing the buck. You know, and you never hear the phrase now when two strikes. I mean, we all were part of those Little League games and high school games. When you got two strikes, it's protect the plate now. Protect the plate. It's not protect the plate anymore. Now it's get ahead in the count and nibble at the plate. And if you get called out on a strike that's 2 inches outside, it's not your fault. So it has evolved. But, Fred, you're exactly right as far as the thing that's interesting is that the system that the players look at during the game is not the one that we're judged on. So quite often, I mean, a hitter will come back up, you know, and if it's said properly, will, you know, say, hey, the strike three you called me on now and was outside. All right? So whenever they say that to me, I make a point of looking at that pitch. And sometimes they're right. But the vast, vast majority of the time, they're not in the system that we use. I think you're not a very good hitter if an umpire can get you out. I really do. I remember Dick Allen, who played for the Phillies for a long time. He said point blank, no umpire ever got me out. You know, and again, there are a lot of 220 hitters now. You know, and it can't all be the umpiring.
I would mention, Fred touched upon it, that part of my job at Major League Baseball was fielding calls from various general managers, if not owners for that matter, who would complain about what might have transpired in a particular game on the field. But by my background, one advantage that I had was to be able to tell the individual, yes, he may have missed on that call, but Jerry mentioned the 220 hitters. Aren't you the guy that gave $80 million to the guy that right now is hitting 210? And that seemed to bring a quick conclusion to many a conversation. One thing about the systems that I might mention, first of all, when you watch on TV, it occurs to me that in terms of balls and strikes, people are looking at it from the opposite direction of what the umpire sees at an off angle, because I don't know of any cameras that are in dead center field, and even if they were, you've got a bad angle because they'd have to look over the top of the pitcher, and with no appreciation for depth perception. In the early systems, I think Jerry mentioned the setting of the lines in the strike zone, and in the early system, I think we used to have a system where the lines for each hitter defining the strike zone on the system were manually set. You had a guy each game who would do that. And I think it was in the 2010 League Championship Series, John Lackey was pitching, Jorge Posada was the hitter, and the umpire, 3-2 count, tight ball game, the umpire called the pitch a ball, ball four to Posada, key point in the game. But people watching saw the ball go through that square. And, of course, there was great media uproar, great national uproar about how this umpire had missed the call. And, oh, you know, it was a fastball, so should have been an easy enough pitch to call. The only thing is, when you looked at it carefully, yes, the ball went through the square on the TV screen. The only problem was the bottom line of the box was set at Posada's ankle. So, yes, by the definition of the box, a strike, but the strike zone was set far too low. Now I think they have a more mechanized system for doing that, but still, it has to be realized, as Jerry indicated, the strike zone for Aaron Judge is going to be a little bit different than Jose Altuve. Another experience that we had in the development of the systems was early on, you used to have a spotter who would spot within the strike zone after watching from the press box where the pitch went. And there was one year where, as I recall, C.C. Sabathia had a tremendous year. But it had to be pointed out to the general managers that really the best pitcher in baseball that year was Ismael Valdez of the Cleveland Indians, because he threw a pitch in one of the postseason games. It went through the box on the screen, but the spotter, whether he had dozed off or whatever, who knows, the person spotting the ball realized that I've spotted this wrong. So you see the pitch go in, and then it goes straight up. One of the better pitches I've seen in many years. But the system now, you know, whatever the umpires are given, given their ability, given their diligence, people advocate electronic strike zone, one thing and another. Be careful what you wish for there. But when you have a staff average exceeding over 2,000 and some odd games per season, and these are the systems. I saw a study recently out of Boston University that alleged that, I think it was last year, that Major League umpires missed, I think they said 34,000 some odd pitches or whatever. I emailed the professor who was in charge of the study and asked him how many pitches were called of these 34,000 allegedly missed. This was about 3 months ago. I'm still waiting for a response, because I have an idea in my mind about how valid that study is. Major League Baseball, and Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, every game when they're audited, as Jerry says, they've got immediate post-game feedback, but every game and every pitch of every game is also reviewed by three experienced, if not former umpires, but MLB evaluators. And they use three, not only because of the number of games involved and the number of pitches involved, but for the sake of consistency. Now, when you have students in a finance course evaluating umpires, and I'm sure everybody wants to be in on the game, I mean, are you using 10? Are you using 20? Are you using 30? Do they know the rule book definition of the strike zone? And are they using what we refer to as raw data, which just shows you on a plot, you know, where the pitch went? As Jerry mentioned, it oft times will not indicate, a pitch that the catcher had to go after and had to be called for the sake of the game in a particular manner by the umpire. So the accuracy is amazing, and the concentration of these people in calling a ball game. Imagine, if you will, Fenway Park, April, 2 degrees or so, bone chilling, and you're behind the plate, and you're off into the seventh or eighth inning. You've seen, what, maybe 70 to 100 pitches up to that point, and every single pitch you're expected to call right on the mark. That's Fenway Park. Now, move yourself to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City in July, where it's probably 180 degrees down there on the turf, and that same situation, and still these guys are maintaining the accuracy registered on the system that the Major League Baseball provides them, which Major League Baseball will tell you is the best that money can buy. the electronic strike zone, I mean, I've certainly had people ask me about that. And as I mentioned, be careful what you wish for, because hypothetically, it's entirely possible. Jerry can give you other examples, but if you have a pitcher of some height on the mound throwing on a downward plane, it's possible for the ball to pass through the strike zone and the catcher to catch it in the dirt, glove up. And if that's what people want the game to be, fine, so be it. But as I mentioned, from there, it'll be a very short leap technologically to a robot pitcher or pitching machine or a robot hitter. I'm of the opinion, traditionalist that I am, let's leave the game alone, trust in the people that have the long-term ability, and it is ability, to do the job.
That's I agree. I think obviously we have to, in fairness, have to say that the two of us are on the same side here. You know, so if there were some players and or executives from major league clubs, perhaps they would say, no, we should have 100% correct behind the plate. We should continue to, improve the electronic systems till that occurs. But that does become exactly what Mike's talking about as far as be careful what you wish for. And I think one of the things Mike said, one of his phrases was going down the wrong road. And I think that, again, I have a biased opinion because I'm an umpire. And, you know, I don't mind prefacing it with that. But one of the allures of baseball, one of the reasons we fell in love with baseball is being taken away a little bit. My wife, who goes to a lot of the games I work, says that whenever there was a close call before and the manager came out, everyone would stand or get to the edge of their seat. And now when there's a replay, everybody goes to the bathroom. You know, so it is a perfect example of be careful what you wish for.
Jerry, if I may, one of the things you hear frequently nowadays, in fact, I think it might be an adage from Major League Baseball, is the element of growing the game. And as Jerry indicated, so many of us grew up, as the game as it was, loving the game. To me, the arguments, although, you know, once in a while, as Jerry mentioned, it's a matter of situation management. But to me, that was always part of the entertainment value, if you will, that transpired. But in terms of growing the game, and the more technology you introduce because of the capability at the major league level, I think that stymies the growth of the game. A gentleman who lives three doors down from me over in Arizona, his son plays Little League Baseball, and he said, we're getting ready for the upcoming Little League season, and I have to get Tommy four things, bat, ball, gloves, and a replay unit. So, again, be careful where we're going with all of this.
Right. We have lots of questions from the audience, so I'll try and answer them as succinctly as you can, because I got a few of them. Okay, yeah, this one would be for Mike. You think there needs to be an evaluation system that removes certain umpires and from the field and puts them in other positions in MLB?
In a word, I will say yes, but only if, given what the game is, only if that individual is shown to be willfully lacking, because the effort is always there. Out of, what are there now, was 76 umpires overall on the staff? Out of 76 umpires, you're going to have some who are not as good as other people. Are they trying? Are they giving their best effort? Did they train as long in the minor leagues? And they must have accomplished something to achieve the major league level. So when I was at Major League Baseball, the effort there was to help the lesser umpires become better, to work on the things they needed to work on. But I think that sometimes you have a system where, you know, sometimes some players aren't as good as others, yet they are kept around on major league rosters for a variety of reasons. But the key with the umpires is they're striving for improvement. They are counseled by supervisors who are former major league umpires, names that many of you would know. And I cannot recall, to my experience, I think it was probably this way in the last century, but I can't really recall too many, if any, instances where an umpire willfully did something inappropriate in terms of a call. Sometimes it's a matter of ability, but given what they go through to get there to begin with, I think it's more a matter of being able to try to help them get the job right.
I'd like to address that quickly as far as what we go through to get there. Mike mentioned the average being 9 years, and I think that's a thing that the fans don't really really put enough credence in. I mean, when we're basically applying for a job in the major leagues, we don't just fill out a resume and go into, like at IBM, where you fill out a resume and you go, you have a couple interviews and you're hired. Our hiring process in general now is a 9-year process. And back in the day, I mean, way back in the day, each league had only one supervisor. Now, we have 9 supervisors that watch these AAA guys when they're about to come up. On a regular basis, they get feedback daily. So when someone is hired now, it's not now, or is it possible that person's not as good as the best guy on the staff? Yes, absolutely that's possible. But the interview process, if you will, is a lot more extensive than you'd realize. So in reality, what you're saying is that this guy should not be on the staff is that 9 supervisors looked at this guy for 9 years and he shouldn't have been the one hired. I mean, if it's one guy and it's the old buddy system and all that stuff that you read about that conceivably could have happened years ago, I can see your point. But the scrutiny that these guys go through now to become major league umpires, and I can say without hesitation that the umpires today are so much more prepared to umpire at the major league level, ask the things that they're asked to do, than they've ever been.
Very good. MLB managers face the media after every game. Should an umpire's crew chief also do the same?
I don't know if we should be available every game. There are instances where things have to go into a report, and quite often players or managers don't agree with what goes in a report. So we have to deal through Major League Baseball in order to do that. I would have no problem dealing with the media and talking with them, but I think that because of the sensitive nature of a lot of the incidents, it's best that we not all the time.
Okay. This one asked about, they used to have to rub up 6 or 7 dozen balls. You guys don't do that?
We don't do that. Our clubhouse attendant does that now. But there's a lot more security about the baseballs because of complaints by some of the players in recent years. So we have to, the crew chief has to go over the baseballs and examine them before every game.
The NBA has had 5 women officials. The NFL has had 2. When is Major League Baseball going to?
I don't think there's any question that a woman can be a Major League umpire. Quite frankly, years ago when Bart Giamatti was the commissioner, he that was on his agenda to get that done. And Pam Postema, some of you may remember the name, was an umpire at the time. And I believe she would be a Major League umpire today had Giamatti lived. But there is no question that it should happen. But again, just like the gender problem we have there. We have that issue with minorities as well, because the millennial society now wants instant gratification. They don't want to spend 9 years in the minor leagues, and that's the issue that we're facing.
This one is a question either we could answer. Reference the human element. Was consideration ever given if they don't make a definitive call within 45 seconds from New York, that the call from the umpire would stay?
That's there's not a specific time limit on that, but we as umpires find that very interesting, you know, in that we have to decide split second. We go to replay. They're looking at it in slow motion and stop action, and it still takes. And I think, again, one of the things that's evolved out of replay is it being used in situations that it wasn't really intended for. I mean, when the guy slides in and he's safe and he pops up and he's this far above the base, I don't really think that was the intent of replay. I think the intent of replay was for the egregious error that obviously occurs. I mean, we're human. It's going to happen. But that's the one, you know, not the strings that hit his glove, that kind of thing. But, you know, the horse is out of the barn already as far as that's concerned, and I don't see that changing. We had a supervisor once write on his report that there was a close call at second, and I looked at the play 22 times and couldn't tell. Well, in my judgment then, the umpire got it right. Or at the very least, he did not get it wrong.
This is for Jerry. What veteran umpires served as mentors for you when you broke into MLB umpiring? What were their strengths that influenced you?
I had two umpires in particular that I think molded me. The first was Bruce Fleming. Back in the day, the National League guys, they were a gruff group, okay? Barlick learned from Al Barlick, and it was, you take no crap. There's one way to handle a situation. And quite frankly, that's how you got out of the minor leagues back then. You had to, quote, unquote, win the argument, all right? You had to either have the last say, yell the loudest, have the most smart alecky account. That's the nicest way I can say that. You had to win the argument. So I came to the major leagues with that mentality. But I was very fortunate that early in my career, I then worked with Doug Harvey. All right, and Doug's mentality was not that you have to be gruff and yell at him and jump in their face. His was you let your work speak for you. You're civil to people, and you let them have their say as long as they do it in a professional manner. And I think I'm somewhere in between there. You know, I think I correlate umpiring a lot with parenting. Everyone's been places where you see some kids with their parents, and some of them are over swinging on the drapes. You know, and others are sitting right next to them, not moving. All right, and I think there's a happy medium there. I think, but the key is that child knows where the line's at. You have to have consistency in your demeanor. A lot of people talk all the time about an umpire being consistent, and I think one of the most important attributes is consistency in your demeanor. So, because if you're going to handle other people, you have to be able to handle yourself. And that child / player has to know where that line is all the time. You have to have a consistency in that so that they know how you're going to react from day to day.
Well, I think we're about running out of time, so I just wanted to have everybody thank Mike Port and Jerry Davis for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm gonna close with one quick war story. Most of you remember Jim Leland. Jim is a very animated manager, and we go back all the way to the minor leagues, back in the late 70s. And I had a play when he was managing Pittsburgh. He came out to argue, and he was being his normal self, bobbing his head and stuff. I said, "All right, Jim, let's go. You had enough to say. Let's go." He said, "Well, all right, Jerry." He says, "But can I ask you one question before I leave?" I said, "Sure, Jim. You can ask me a question." He says, "Can you kick me out for what I'm thinking?" And I said, "Well, no, I can't kick you out for what you're thinking." He said, "That's good, because I think you suck." So I kick him out. And he says, "Hey," he goes nuts all over again, throwing his hat down and stuff. He says, "You told me you couldn't kick me out for what I was thinking." I said, "I didn't kick you out for what you were thinking. I kicked you out for telling me what you were thinking." Thank you all very much.